Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as New Jersey Governor Chris Christie gave the green light for medical marijuana in that state yesterday, the final green light, concerns about a very different drug are keeping patients writhing in pain all over the globe. Medical morphine, the gold standard for pain treatment, is rarely available in over half the countries in the world, leaving tens of millions of people suffering because they don't have the adequate drugs to relieve the pain from late-stage disease or trauma of surgery or whatever. Morphine is inexpensive and easy to make, but the worldwide war on drugs has equated morphine with heroin and created impossible obstacles for doctors who want to administer it to patients in many places. This underreported story is the focus of a half-hour documentary airing tonight on Al Jazeera. It's the product of a collaboration between that news organization and the International Reporting Program at the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of British Columbia. Students from the program travel to India, Uganda, and Ukraine to find out what's keeping morphine from those who need it most. Joining me now is Professor Peter Klein. He led the project and is acting director and associate professor at the school. Neve Scallon also joins me. She is one of Klein's former students who worked on the project and reported from Ukraine for the story. Their half-hour documentary called Freedom from Pain will air on Al Jazeera English tonight. Welcome both of you to WNYC. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
Professor Klein, it would not be a stretch to say that the vast majority of people listening now have never heard of a morphine shortage. So what brought the focus of the class to this issue?
Well, I had never heard of it either, and I've done stories on global health for many, many years. It was mentioned to me sort of in passing by actually a doctor in New York, Darren Portnoy, who's done a lot of work with Doctors Without Borders, and he mentioned this to me in passing that, you know, it sort of breaks his heart when he sees people suffering like this. And my ears perked up, and I said I couldn't believe this was going on in the shadows, that you know, none of us have any idea. And really, it really struck me as one of these sort of hidden human rights issues that, you know, really deserved some attention.
Neve, in Ukraine, I gather you visited a patient suffering from end-stage prostate cancer. You were joined by Dr. James Cleary, a specialist in pain relief. We have a clip of Dr. Cleary talking about the patient. You want to set this up for us? Tell us who he is and who he's talking about.
So about a couple hours drive out of Kiev, which is the capital of Ukraine, we met Artur, who is a former KGB spy colonel who had stage 4 prostate cancer. And we went out to visit him, and basically he has isolated himself from his family. His family still live in Kiev, and he lives in this shack in the middle of the countryside because he's embarrassed about his pain, and he didn't want people to see him suffering, and he had very little pain medication. So basically he was writhing in pain every day.
And here is Dr.
Up
James.
Until he died.
And here is Dr. Cleary talking about that patient.
Because of his pain, he's cut himself off from his family. What greater time is there for a man to need his family than when he's facing advanced disease? But what did he say? He didn't want them to see him cry. To watch Arturo reach under his pillow as he's talking about potentially ending his own life and then just pulling out this gun. This is not a gun in a cupboard. This is a gun that he sleeps on. So clearly the impact of this severe pain is great if he's that close most of the time.
So is Arturo typical of a patient suffering from a lot of pain without morphine? I guess the answer to that, Neve, is obvious.
Yes, he is. He was going through a range of emotions. He was angry. He was upset. It was a terrible situation to see that basically these people they don't want to be a burden on their family, and he was essentially suffering in silence in the middle of nowhere with no support and no medication to help him get through the pain.
You said before the clip that he died. The clip raises the question, did he kill himself?
We don't know that because he he had a few people who were helping him from a nearby town, but he stopped calling them in the month before he died, and they didn't know why. We know that he was in the very end stages of his life. He actually lived more than a year beyond what doctors said he would. So we're not sure, but he was definitely threatening it to us when we were there.
And Peter Klein, Arturo, to stay with this case because it's so emblematic, he does get a small amount of morphine from a visiting nurse. His other form of pain relief comes in the bottle of alcohol that he drinks from. But there's also a supplier giving him morphine illegally. Is that part of a larger black market morphine network?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things we've seen all over the world, and we went to three countries and looked at many others, is that, you know, there are these sort of handfuls of people who are so moved by this crisis that they've gone to extreme measures to try to solve it. In some cases, they have the power, the political power to make broader changes. And in the case of Ukraine, I think the bureaucracy is so difficult that I think making a big change nationally at this point maybe too challenging. So this one young guy named Sergey, we sort of characterize him as a Robin Hood, because he essentially goes, everybody in Ukraine can get up to 50 milligrams of morphine. Some people don't need that much. So he's figured out a way to get morphine and other types of opiates from people who have it but don't need it, collects it, and gives it to people who do need it. And that's exactly what he was doing for Artur. And at one point, Artur breaks down, you know, sobbing, saying, you know, it's because of Sergey, you know, you saved my life. Thank you so much. You're the only reason I want to exist, because Sergey offers him, you know, some sense of relief.
Mm. Now, this is a heavy thing to invite calls on. I don't know if anybody happens to be listening, since here in New York we have listeners who come from all over the world, who has any experience with lack of access to painkillers for you or your loved ones back home. But if this is something that you have any personal connection to, or any question at all, you can call in 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. This is not the segment that's going to make our ratings go up, but this is an important thing to talk about as we sample from this documentary that's going to air on Al Jazeera English tonight. And I gather, Professor Klein, that in countries like Uganda, which you use as a good example of a country where morphine has become more available for pain treatment, there's been an increase in heroin use as well. So, forgive me. The question is, has there been an increase in heroin use as well? So is this a double-edged sword where the war on drugs, on some level legitimately, intersects with the shortage of painkiller?
Right. Well, and that's exactly – that's been the general concern and one of the impediments for access to morphine, because people are afraid that if you allow morphine, then there's going to be abuse of that, even just abuse of morphine itself. We certainly – we're only journalists, so we've looked at what other people have done in terms of studies. The studies show that is not the case. And Uganda is a good example, because, you know, in Uganda you don't have injectable morphine. You know, most people think of morphine, if you've ever had any experience with morphine, is that sort of drip next to you in the hospital, running on a pump. But most people get morphine in the form of tablets or liquid, oral morphine, and that's really hard to abuse, especially the liquid form. And that's what they use in Uganda. Basically, virtually everybody in Uganda is on they mix them at this one hospice in Kampala, and they put them in recycled water bottles, and they dye it three different colors based upon the strength, and they send them out with nurses into the villages and into the slums and give them to patients, and those patients, you know, take it as they need it, and really we have found no evidence of rampant abuse at all.
Neve, in the documentary, you note that patients in Ukraine and elsewhere are getting a fraction of the morphine dose that patients typically get in the U.S., and in a form that just lasts a short time. Morphine is highly addictive. Is it possible that this kind of dosage actually creates more pain from withdrawal?
I don't think that has been proven. And certainly when we spoke with Dr. Cleary, who is, you know, a global voice on pain management, he was saying, you know, that that has not been proven, that withdrawal symptoms from morphine. I mean, we're talking about these people who are in, you know, the end stages of their life. They're dealing with excruciating pain from cancer or whatever other disease they're dealing with. It's been shown that that morphine is an acceptable way to deal with that pain. And unfortunately, it is getting caught up in this, you know, global war on drugs.
Here's another clip from the documentary, as your team also traveled to India to report on this. This is a clip of Ramesh Bhattachary, India's former narcotics commissioner.
The laws that are so harsh that doctors are scared to prescribe them. You know, a doctor has to account for even a 0.1 milligram of morphine. 0.1 milligram goes astray. They can even go to jail for a year. It's rather strange, it's rather paradoxical that, you know, here we have enough morphine supplies, but we can't administer them because of these wretched rules. And that is what has to change.
So India, Peter Klein, actually produces the opium that goes into making morphine, and those poppy fields are operated by the government, but morphine is not so available for people there, and doctors can go to jail if they lose track of one tiny, tiny little bit. How does that happen?
I mean, it's one of the bitter ironies of the story. There are millions of acres of poppy fields, and unlike in neighboring Afghanistan, where, of course, the poppy is used to make illicit drugs like heroin and opium. In India, it's mostly in these government-run farms, and it's used to make medical grade morphine for all over the world. But in India itself, their rules are so strict. In virtually every state except one, in Kerala, the rules are so strict that the doctors are essentially afraid to prescribe it. As the former commissioner acknowledged, you know, if 0.1 milligram goes missing, doctors are liable. They could literally go to jail for that. So nobody wants to deal with it. Doctors don't prescribe it. Patients don't ask for it. So there's no demand and there's no supply, and yet people still end up suffering.
Let's get a few callers in here. A lot of people are calling in, as it turns out. Virginia in Saranac Lake, you're on WNYC. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just one example of many that I can give of the restrictive nature of pain management is that I had a family member who was living in Puerto Rico. And in Puerto Rico, they treated pain management for osteoarthritis and fibromyalgia with methadone. And when this family member had to come to New York State for surgery, he was not able to have his methadone transferred to New York. And we had to go through a very difficult process of having him be taken off of methadone under the supervision of a doctor and placed on other medication, which also has its side effects. In New York State, people with fibromyalgia are treated with Lyrica or Cymbalta. Those drugs are synthetic drugs and can have major side effects. Morphine in a liquid or a tablet form does not have such harmful effects. And my feeling is that the government is way too restrictive. When we have to have a controlled substance prescription for a drug like Lyrica, when we have a chronic pain condition, that's unconscionable.
I understand. Virginia, thank you very much for your call. Judy in Westfield, a nurse. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you? Okay. I've been working in chemical dependence, and I'm finding that I'm coming from two perspectives in terms of the pain control and people that are suffering with pain, and I'm also finding that people that are getting hooked on the pain medication. There's statistics now that are showing that the people that are dying from overdoses and that they're using it just for relaxing or for anxiety or for this type of thing, and it's not really helping with the pain. So I'm finding that people are, you know, we're finding overdose, and the statistics are going up. And as far as the pain, in terms of people that are suffering with terminal pain, there's other methods that could be used. So I think there's a lot of ethical questions here and people from all different arenas that are playing into this.
What kind of alternative methods?
Well, you have the comfort. You know, I find that pain is it's individual. People have different levels of pain. And, you know, some person with a pain might just take a Motrin or a Tylenol. I'm talking about very severe pain, you know. And other people, you know, if you get a little scratch, they're going to, you know, need an IV morphine drip.
Right. Well, people are more sensitive or less sensitive. Thank you. Raising some of the complexity of this. Yvonne in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Yvonne.
Hi. My perspective is really from the U.S. again, similar to the other callers. I would emphasize that it isn't just an overseas problem in terms of under-medicating people at the end of life. I have many years
but not, experience. Not for lack of availability, but you're going to make the same point that it's for lack of willingness?
Yes, and an ethical question comes up, which I think is partly bogus, and that is, if you're terminally ill, what meaningfulness does it have to say that you're going to become addicted to morphine?
Right.
Just one quick example. I walked into an ICU, this is in the 90s, a young person, terminally ill with Crohn's disease and many other illnesses, and the two residents by her bedside were kind of half-joking with her, saying, well, we don't want you to get addicted. And I think it was, you know, highly insulting and uncaring. So I think we have to be careful the way we use ethics.
Yvonne, thank you very much. Well, we're almost out of time, but Peter Klein, you hear the calls coming in, and frankly, I could take a whole bunch of more similar calls saying this is a problem even in the United States, not for lack of availability, but probably still bound up with this idea of the war on drugs and the problem of addiction, even in the last stages of life in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a problem in the United States, and if we had had more time and budget, we probably would have tackled this because we did quite a bit of research on it. In nursing homes in particular, because of very restrictive rules in nursing homes, the New York Times did a big piece on this a couple months ago, there are quite a few situations where patients are in severe pain for whatever reason in the nursing home, and if it's off hours, the doctor or the nurse there cannot give morphine, even though there's morphine in an emergency pack in every single nursing home on the wall. They can't open that up and administer the morphine because the DEA rules require that a pharmacist sign off on it, and if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't find a pharmacist. There's efforts by the Senate Committee on Aging to change those rules. But, you know, you see that bureaucracy and that essentially fear of opiates manifest right here in North America.
Peter Klein from the Graduate School of Journalism at the University of British Columbia, and Neve Scallon, one of his former students who reported from Ukraine for the documentary called Freedom from Pain, to air on Al Jazeera English tonight. Since nobody carries Al Jazeera on cable systems in the U.S., where can people see this, Neve, online, or Peter?
Yeah, you can go. Well, Al Jazeera English has its own website. It's
right.
on the show called People in Power.
Okay.
And you can also see it. We'll be linking to it in our program's website, internationalreporting.org/pain.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
both of you. And boy, do we need Paula Poundstone after that. And she'll be here. Stay with us.